So, first of all, I thank all of you for coming out. It is really cold, and there's a lot of Mesiras Nefesh, I guess, even to walk from Bennett Avenue down to the Shul tonight, because it's really cold, but thank you for coming. Oh, definitely. Extra points. The topic tonight, I believe it was Shlomo Ben Zakein who came up with the title, which is When in Rome, Do as the Romans. And the question I want to discuss is the scope of Dina de Malchuta Dina. Right? We have this principle, everyone knows it. Dina de Malchuta Dina, we follow the law of the land. And the question is, well, do we always follow the law of the land? Under which circumstances do we? Under which circumstances don't we follow the law of the land? It's really not abundantly clear. Rav Schechter always tells a story about how one time Rav Soloveitchik was involved in a conversation with a Reform rabbi in Boston. And Rav Soloveitchik was asking the Reform rabbi, well, how come you don't require a get? How come when a couple is dissolving their marriage, you don't require a ritual bill of divorce? There's no get that's required. And the Reform rabbi said, well, Rabbi Soloveitchik, I thought you're a scholar. You know that Dina de Malchuta Dina, the law of the land is the law, and therefore we don't require a get. So Rav Soloveitchik, of course, decided to engage him in the debates. He says, well, okay, so how come you then require Kedushin? How come you have to have a rabbi officiating at the wedding? If Dina de Malchuta Dina, and therefore you don't require a get, so you also shouldn't have to have a rabbi officiate at the wedding. So the Reform rabbi, he was too smart. He says, no, Rabbi Soloveitchik, I thought you were a Talmid Chacham. I thought you knew how to learn. Everybody knows that we don't say Dina de Malchuta when it comes to doing a mitzvah. And getting married is a mitzvah because we recite brachos when we get married. But a get, we don't recite brachos when we give a get, so therefore it's not a mitzvah, so therefore we do apply Dina de Malchuta. This is what that Reform rabbi was arguing. Now, obviously, this is dead wrong, right? We know that we do not say Dina de Malchuta Dina to obviate the need for a get. But the question that we have to figure out and that we'll try to discuss tonight is why not? Why is this Reform rabbi wrong? First of all, his entire premise is also questionable. The assumption that there's a mitzvah to get married, but there's no mitzvah to get divorced. Please don't tell anyone I said this. But in fact, there is a mitzvah to get divorced. But mitzvah does not mean you're supposed to do it. Right? Mitzvah, when we say that there are 613 mitzvahs, some of the mitzvahs, for example, are that there are mitzvahs not to enter the Beis HaMikdash when you're tamei. Do not try this in your own home. Do not try to become tamei and enter the Beis HaMikdash. There are mitzvahs of... There are many different mitzvahs, right? Mitzvahs means 613 mitzvahs, 248 positive, 365 negative. You're not supposed to try to do all the mitzvahs. Mitzvah sometimes means, like, becoming tahar when you're tamei is a mitzvah, according to half of the Rishonim. The Sefer HaChinuch has a discussion of this. Mitzvah doesn't mean you're supposed to do this. Mitzvah means it's a very nice and important Torah idea. So, in fact, giving a get is a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah in the Torah to get divorced. It doesn't mean you're supposed to get divorced, although in certain circumstances you are supposed to get divorced. But at the same time, it's a mitzvah. How come we don't recite a bracha when we give a get is a very good question that was actually dealt with by some of the Rishonim. Maybe if we talk about the halachos of Gittin, we'll begin with that topic. But there's a whole literature on that question as well. So now, what we want to do tonight is discuss the scope of Dina de Malchuta Dina. It's a very big topic. Obviously, we can't do everything, but we'll try to touch on some of the salient points. The concept of Dina de Malchuta Dina comes up four times in Shas. Four times, it's a sugya in the Darim, in Bava Basra, in Bava Kama, and in Gittin. Four times. I just want to give you one of the sugyot over here. The Gemara in the Darim is discussing the Dharma vows. If I say that I will not eat potato chips, because potato chips obviously make me very fat, so I say I will not eat potato chips, so that's an oath. That's a shavua. That's phrased in the positive. I won't. If I say potato chips are forbidden unto me, that is called a neder, that is a vow, that is what we call in the Gemara an Isser Cheftza, right? That's the time in Shas that we use the brisker terminology. Isser Cheftza and Isser Gavra is Nedarim versus Shavuos. So the Mishnah in Nedarim tells us that most often we're not supposed to take Nedarim. However, there's certain times I'm allowed to take a neder, even though it's false. It's a false neder, but I'm allowed to take it. Nodrin, the Mishnah says, source number one, laharagin ulacharamin ulamuchsin. Let's say the tax collector is coming around, or that's a nice case, that's muchsin, or haragin. Haragin means that there are certain bandits who are coming who are going to kill you. So I'm allowed to take a vow to these people, shehi truma, afabi sheino truma. We see that this bandit is coming, he wants to take my stuff away, so I say, oh, don't take that because it's truma, and I take a vow that it's truma, to prove to him that it really is. Shehin shal beis hamelech, afabi sheino shal beis hamelech. I'm allowed to say, oh, don't take that stuff because it belongs to the king, and if you take it, you know, it got the cooties, or whatever we used to say in third grade, so you don't want to take it away because it shall... it belongs to the king, even though it's not true, I'm allowed to take this neder. That's what the Mishnah says. So the Gemara asks, how am I allowed to take the neder? Basically, what happens is there's a tax collector who's coming, and he wants to take away my MP3 player as taxes. So I say, don't take it, it belongs to the king already. He says, oh, the king's, I'm not going to take it. It's an outright lie, it's not true. So the Gemara asks, how am I allowed to take this neder? How can I take the veil? The Ha'amar Shmuel, Dina de Malchuta Dina. Shmuel said that the law of the land is the law. And therefore, I'm obligated to pay taxes. If I'm obligated to pay taxes, so how am I allowed to take the vow to exempt myself from taxes? So the Gemara gives a few answers. I'm Reb Chinan, I'm Reb Kahan, I'm Reb Shmuel, the Muchas She'in La Kitzvah. The first answer is that we're talking about not the regular tax collector. We're talking about a tax collector who's going to take away your shirt. He's going to take everything you have. Muchas She'in La Kitzvah. He has no set amount. He can take anything away. The Vei Reb Yannai says, "B'muchas ha'omin me'elav." It's just a person who appointed himself tax collector who wasn't appointed by the government. So the first principle that we see here in the Gemara in the Nedarim, which we're not going to focus on extensively, is that not every law is binding on Dina D'Malchuta grounds. If I have a law that's established by a legitimate government, it's binding. But if I have muchas ha'omin me'elav, some guy appoints himself as tax collector and says, you have to pay 85% of your income to me as taxes. Right? Muchas ha'omin me'elo. Ha'muchas she'en lo kitzvah. In that situation, the principle of dina d'malchuta does not apply. That's what the Gemara in the Nedarim says. And this is accepted by everyone, that dina d'malchuta only applies to legitimate governments. It doesn't apply to pirates. Okay, so if you're in Somalia, there's no dina d'malchuta. That's point one. Yeah, you had a question?
Why is the Gemara not bothered that you're taking a false oath?
Why is the Gemara not bothered? So, in the continuation of the Gemara, there's a bit of a discussion that this oath is not a false oath because everybody knows that people take these types of false oaths in these situations, and since there's an umdana, so therefore we're okay with that.
If everyone knows that, it won't be effective either.
What?
If everyone knows that, it won't be effective either.
Well, the tax collector doesn't know it, but all of... Do you need Adam?
I mean, two people, like a basement or something.
Yeah, for the net, to get rid of the net there, you need Adam. I could
To make a net,
I don't need Adam. I could, on my own, in my own kitchen, I could say I'm not going to eat potato chips. And it's perfectly valid. And I'm not allowed to eat potato chips. Yeah, no, you don't need... What?
You need a basement
to get you off of it. That's right. That's what we try to do before Rosh Hashanah, you have a basement. Now, the question really comes up, what is the basis of Dina D'Malchuta? We are going to assume that Dina D'Malchuta is a Torah principle, it's a Din D'Oraisa, it's not rabbinic. There is a position in Evan Ha'ezer, in Simon Chav Ches, the Beis Shmuel quotes that Dina D'Malchuta is only a Din D'Rabbanon. It's only rabbinic in nature. He says, well, there's no pasuk anywhere about Dina D'Malchuta Dina, so therefore, obviously, it is rabbinic, it's something that the rabbis invented. It's an interesting idea, but it's not accepted. We assume that Dina D'Malchuta is a Torah principle. Yeah?
I mean, no one says anything about this principle until Shmuel.
Shmuel
doesn't quote a pasuk. He doesn't quote a braisa.
Correct.
It doesn't sound like a braisa.
So where did Shmuel get it from? That's really the question. So the Me'iri in Maseches Nedarim has an interesting idea. The Me'iri is a fascinating Rishon. If you're interested in reading about the Me'iri... Dr. Halbertal has an excellent book, which was printed beforehand in the now-defunct Eidah Journal. Some excellent articles.
It
became the Ma'orot Journal.
Right. So you can still get it online.
Okay. But Dr. Halbertal, in his article about the Me'iri, I think he calls the book Bein Yisrael, I forgot already. So Dr. Halbertal has a nice book about the Me'iri. He deals with the Me'iri extensively. The Me'iri is a fascinating Rishon. He's a Rishon from Provence. In Provence, they wrote books that were basically digests. They would just quote all of the different shitos of Rishonim and put it together and write essays in that sort of way. So the Me'iri has a comment that he says Shmuel, who said Dina de Malchuta Dina, is what we would call in yeshiva l'shitaso. Shmuel is consistent with his own position from elsewhere in Shas. The Gemara, or we should start from the Psukim. The Psukim in Sefer Shmuel say that the Jewish people ask Shmuel for a king, right? And what did Shmuel respond? You don't want the king. You don't want the king. Why? Because if you're going to have a king, what's the king going to do?
That's why wives tax you.
He's going to tax you. He's going to take away your sons and your daughters, and he's going to make your kids into rakachot and tabachot. He's going to make them work in the kitchens and work very hard, and everyone's going to be the king's slaves. You don't want a king. That's Shmuel's response. Now, question. When Shmuel said all of these awful things that a king is allowed to do, to take away all of your kids and put them into the army and take away your fields and take away your vineyards, these are all things in the Psukim in Sefer Shmuel. Is that really permitted? Is a king really allowed to go and take the stuff away?
That's what life is like.
So the question is it a reality that Shmuel is presenting? This is what life is like. And he's trying to tell the Jewish people, don't ask for a king, because if you're going to have a king, life is going to be nasty. Right? It's going to be really, really bad. Right, if you're going to have a king. Or, alternatively, Shmuel being the Navi Shmuel, is telling us a reality. The reality is, the halacha is, that it's permitted for a king to take all these things. So that's the question that the Gemara in Sanhedrin addresses. Let's look at the Gemara here. Source number 2. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kola Amar B'Parshat Melech, Melech Mutarbo. Whatever it says in Parashat Melech, whatever the Psukim and Sefer Shmuel say about the king, Melech Mutarbo, that means that the king is allowed to do whatever it says. Halachically, the king is allowed to take your field, he's allowed to take your kids, he's allowed to take your wife, he can take whatever he wants, he's the king. Right? That's Shmuel's position. Then Rav Amar, Rav disagrees, and Rav says, Rol ne'emra parasha zu ela la'ayim aleihem. Rav says that this parasha that's written in the Torah is only written to terrorize them. This parasha in the Navi, when Shmuel the Navi says, don't take a king because the king could take away your fields and your vineyards and your kids, he's doing that only to terrorize you. So says the Me'iri. This sounds like Torah that we'd have from 300 years ago, not Torah that we'd have from 800 years ago. But the Me'iri says, you know what? When Shmuel said Dina de Malchuta Dina, Shmuel is l'shitasel. Shmuel is following his opinion in Sanhedrin that Kol HaOmer b'Parashat Melech, Melech Mutarbo. That the king is allowed to do whatever the Psukim in Sefer Shmuel say. He could take away your fields, he could take away your kids, and that is the basis of Dina de Malchuta Dina. Right? That is what the Me'iri suggests. What this basically means is that Dina de Malchuta Dina is a limited principle. It's a principle that applies to someone who's a king, by the halachic definition of a king. And all of the rules that Shmuel Hanavi said about a king is really the only rules that we have for Dina de Malchuta Dina. But we can't just go and make up other things and say that that's included in Dina de Malchuta Dina. No, it's all based on the Psukim in Shmuel. Only those things that are mentioned in Shmuel is, only those things are included in Dina de Malchuta Dina. Yeah?
The Gemara doesn't record anything about Rav disagreeing with Dina de Malchuta Dina.
Oh, okay, good. So, excellent point. So now, what emerged from this Me'iri's understanding is that Dina de Malchuta Dina, this principle that we all live our lives by, I think, or we try, right, this principle is really a machlokas. It's machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Right? Because Shmuel says, Kolon Pashas Melech Melech Mutarbo, he holds Dina de Malchusa. But Rav would not hold of Dina de Malchusa Dina. And this cannot be true. I probably should have printed this out for you. The Me'iri, right, the Ritva, writes in Mesechus Nedarim and Daf Chavches that no one disagrees with Dina de Malchusa Dina. It was never a machlokas. Impossible there should be a dispute. Everyone has to agree with Dina de Malchus Adina. What the source is, we have to talk about. But no one disagrees. So obviously, this is not true according to the Meiri. Moreover, Tosos in Sanhedrin asks the following question. We know the story of Achav, right? What happened with Achav? Achav wanted a vineyard that was owned by Navos, right? So Achav says, okay, Navos, sell me the vineyard. And Navos says, I'm not going to sell you my vineyard. I've had this vineyard in my family for many, many years. I'm not selling it to you, right? So Achav goes and he takes it away. And the Navi tells Achav that was a bad thing, right? He gets punished. Question, why is he punished? Tosos asks. If Kol Omer B'Parshas Melech, Melech Mutarbo, if a king can do whatever he wants, so why was he punished for taking the vineyard of Navos? That's what Tosos asks. So Tosos has five answers, or six answers, I didn't count. Tosos has a bunch of answers there in Sanhedrin. Yeah. So one answer that Tosos gives is that Achav was punished because he wanted the vineyard for Avodah Zarah, and it really has nothing to do with taking the vineyard. Taking the vineyard is okay. The problem is Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is bad, by the way. Right. We try to avoid it. That's one answer that Tosos suggests. But another answer that Tosos gives is that Parashas HaMelech is only said about a king who's a king over the entire Jewish people. Achav was not a king over the entire Jewish people. Therefore, the rules of Parashas HaMelech don't apply to Achav. Now, if that's the case, and we put two and two together, so then we have a really limited application of Dina de Malchus Adina, then what we're saying is that Dina de Malchus Adina only applies when the king who institutes the rules is a Jewish king over the entire Jewish people. That's, as we say in my favorite movie, inconceivable. It can't be. It's not Shaykh, right? It can't be that it's such a limited principle. Fine. So what's the story? What's the source of Dina de Malchus Adina? If we'd want to give a shir on this topic, there's, I think, six approaches in Rishonim, and then there's a famous approach that's not found in any Rishon, but the Dvar Avram says it. The Dvar Avram was the last Rav in Kovno. We know exactly when he died. I think he died December 7th, 1941. Famous date, right? And he died in what was called, I think, the Ninth Fort, outside of Kovno. We know that there was an action, and they gathered everyone up, and he and Rebbe Chanan Wasserman actually were killed on the same day. We know this about the Dvar Avram. So the Dvar Avram also wrote a famous letter about Rav Soloveitchik. That's another reason why he's famous. So the Dvar Avram has a theory that the idea of Dina de Malchus Adina is the same idea that we have elsewhere in Shas called Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Hefker Bezdin Hefker means that Bezdin, not in their halachic role, there are two roles of Bezdin. Bezdin has a role as the halachic decision makers, and Bezdin also has a role as a legal body, people who enforce laws, people who are a legislative body, not necessarily a Torah legislative body, but just leaders of the community. So the Dvar Avram says that the same principle of Hefker, Bezdin Hefker, that Bezdin can be mach your items, Bezdin could say, oh, that chair doesn't belong to you anymore, right? Bezdin could use their power and just take money, at least according to half of the Rishon, they could take money from this person and give it to that person. That's what Bezdin could do, Hefker, Bezdin Hefker. Hefker, Bezdin Hefker is probably also a Dindo Rai, so it's based on Psukim, again, it's Psukim in Ezra, but we assume that's a Din Doraisa also. So, says the Dvar Avram that the same principle behind Hefker Bezdin Hefker is the principle of Dina de Malchus Adina, which basically is a principle that says that the leaders of the community are in charge of monetary matters. And the leaders can decide who owns which. They can determine ownership and not ownership. That is what Hefker Bezdin Hefker means. And that is what Dina de Malchusa means. The leader of the community, which, by the way, means that you don't need a king. You could have any leader of a community. And the leader decides, this is the law. He has the right to determine ownership and non-ownership. That's the theory of the Dvar Avram, which is an interesting theory. And which is, by the way, accepted by most poskim. Which means, and we'll talk about this in greater length as we move on, that the principle of Dina de Mahusa only is true in Dine Mominus. The reason why our Reform rabbi, who we began with, is wrong, and Dina de Mahusa Dina doesn't tell me that I don't need a get, because the government says I don't need a get, so how come I need a get? The answer is that no. Dina de Mahusa Dina is only true, like Hefker Bezen Hefker, it's only true in monetary matters. But if something is a ritual matter, so Dina de Mahusa is absolutely not true. This is the principle of the Dvar Avram. Even those Rishonim who give other sources for Dina de Mahusa probably agree in principle to his suggestion that Dina de Mahusa is only true in monetary matters. And we'll talk about that as we move on. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what were they passing before the Dvar Avram came around?
They probably assumed the same way. For other reasons. Again, maybe if we decide to give a few more shiurim on this topic, we'll go through the other Rishonim and how they answer this question about what's the source of Dina de Mahusa. Right now we're just trying to streamline things. Okay, now let's move on. The Gemara in Gittin. Right, the Gemara in Gittin is source three, in the sheet. We have a principle that all shtaros, kol hashtaros ha'olam be'arkaot sha'ovde kolchavim, afokhi shechotmehem ovde kolchavim, sheirim, chutz migitei noshim v'shukurei avadim. That any document that is a document that's processed in a non-Jewish court and is signed by a non-Jew, the document is signed by Jesus. There's no name that is less Jewish than the name Jesus, right? And, okay, maybe you disagree with that point. I don't know. Like, he was Jewish, right? That's what you're saying. Okay, so Taina. Thank you, Rabbi Riskin. So, all shtaros that are processed in non-Jewish courts, even though they are signed by non-Jews, are kosher, with the exception of Gitei Noshim, which are divorce documents, and Shechurei Avodim, which are called, I think, technically, writs of manumission. Right? These are shtaros that you use to free an eved. Fine. So the Gemara picks up and the Gemara says, one second, all documents that come in a non-Jewish court are kosher? How could that be? That means, you see, in Halacha, there are two types of documents. There's what we call a shtar kinyan, and there's a shtar raya. A shtar raya is a document that proves that a transaction occurred. I sold you my field. How did I sell you my field? Well, the halacha says I'm kona a field because I pay for it. I give kesef. And that's how I'm kona the field. The field is mine because I paid for it. So why am I writing a document? I'm writing the document because you need a record, right? You need a record to say that I bought the field. Fine. So that is... That's one type of shtar. That's a shtar raya. Another type of shtar would be a shtar matana, for example. A shtar matana is, let's say I want to give my field to you. So if I want to give the field to you, you're not paying for it. So what's the mechanism by which you acquire the field? It's the document itself is the mechanism by which you acquire the field. It's a shtar matana, which is what we call a shtar kinyan in halacha. The document itself is creating the transaction. So the Gemara asks a question. The Gemara says, I understand by a shtar that is a proof only. So we could say, that the shtar, even though it goes through, even though it's processed in a non-Jewish court, the shtar is still going to be kosher, because the non-Jews also, they have a reputation. They wouldn't ruin their reputation and sign a document if they didn't know that it's true. Ella, two lines in the bottom, matana b'may kokani. By a shtar matana, how can you be kona? La b'hay shtara chas b'ba'almahu. Right? The only way you can be kona with a shtar matana, if I'm handing it over, is by the document itself is creating the transaction. But if this document is processed in a non-Jewish court, and it's signed by non-Jews, so the document has no validity. So how are you kona? So, Amar Shmuel, Dina de Malchuta Dina. Shmuel says, Dina de Malchuta Dina. The government says that a document that's processed in a non-Jewish court is a valid document. Good enough for me? The other opinion is, no, tini chutz mi kigi tenashim. That we have to change the text in the Mishnah, we have to add a letter, that what the Mishnah is saying is not that every single document in the world that's processed in a non-Jewish court is going to be kosher, rather, only those documents which are a shtar raya is kosher. But any document that is like a get, any document, right, if a person divorces his wife, the get itself, the handing over that document, creates the transaction. She becomes divorced because you handed that document over. So any document that's like a get, that's a shtar kinyan, so then any document like that is not going to be valid in the non-Jewish court. So now, what happens over here? We mentioned a few minutes ago that no one disagrees with Dina de Malchuta Dina, correct? Isn't that what we said? Everybody agrees to the principle. No one in the history of Judaism has ever disagreed. But I have a Gemara that asks a question. How is a shtar kinyan kosher? A shtar, a document, that the transaction itself occurs because you hand over that document. How is it kosher when it's processed in a non-Jewish court and is signed by non-Jews? How could that be? So the Gemara answers, one, Dina de Malchuta. Two, well, it's not kosher. The only time it's kosher is if it's a shtar raya, not if it's a shtar kinyan. So now, one second, doesn't that mean that opinion two is saying that Dina de Malchuta does not help? Isn't that the simple read of the Gemara? So this became a big topic. The answer is not, no. Everybody says Dina de Malchuta helps. However, Dina de Malchuta might only help in ordinary cases where, let's say, the government is doing something for the government's benefit. The classical case of Dina de Malchuta, the case that we began with, is what? Taxes. Why does the government tax us? I don't want any cynical answers. What? Because they provide services, right? The government taxes us. That's a democratic idea. Or the government taxes us because the government wants our money. No? Isn't that an easier way of saying it? The government...
Income equality and equity and to have an income distribution so that those who are suffering at the expense of those...
This sounds communist.
It's in an ideal world.
I think the government taxes people because the government wants the money, which basically means that taxes is something that the government benefits from. It could be, and half of the Rishonim say this, it's a little bit later than I thought it was, so maybe we won't read it inside, but this is a dispute between the Rambam and the Rosh. And this is a dispute between the Mechaber and the Rambam, la halacha. Half of the Rishonim, the Rambam, and the Mechaber, they assume that Dina de Malchuta only applies to when the government taxes. Because we only say Dina de Malchuta when there is Hana'a that the king gets, or the government gets. Rav Kook writes in a few tshuvos that democratic governments have the same halacha as a king. But we only apply Dina de Malchuta when the government gets Hana'a from that law. However, if it's a law that involves which documents are good documents, does the government gain anything from that? Is there any vested interest that they have? Probably not. Right? What does the government gain that, well, the sale of this field is accomplished by handing a document over? So what? The government doesn't gain anything. So it could be that the reason why the second answer in the Seches Gittin argues on the first answer is because the second answer says, you know what, Shmuel? You can't say Dina de Malchuta, because Dina de Malchuta is limited only in cases where the government benefits, where it's for Hana'a for the king. But in this case, in Gittin, where we're talking about the documents and which documents are valid, which are not valid, and the government doesn't gain any money from it, so then Dina de Malchuta cannot apply. That is the way the Rambam understands it. However, the Rosh and Ashkenazi Rishonim, the Ramah follows the Rosh, the Ashkenazi Rishonim all say that no, that really the second answer in the Gemara is not disagreeing with the first answer. Second answer is saying we would apply Dina de Malchuta even on a shtar even on the case of a document, even though the government isn't gaining any monetary value, we would still apply the principle of dina de malchuta dina. However, they give a second answer because let's say you live in a place where there's no government. This is, if you'll look in the Rashba here in Gittin and in the Ran, these Rishonim all have two opinions, as to whether the answers in the Gemara agree or disagree. And if you'll look in Shulchan Aruch, this is a dispute between the Mechaber and the Rambam. The Sfardi approach, Lahalacha, is that Dina de Machuta Dina is very limited. It only applies to taxes. Who here is a Sfardi? Okay. When did you become Sfardi? What? So Dina de Malchuta only applies to taxes. Now, I shouldn't say it's so limited, because there are other things that we're not going to talk about this week, like extradition or something is another element of Dina de Malchuta. Like, or does a person have a right to work as a warden, to grab criminals?
A bounty hunter,
thank you. So that's another aspect where Dina de Malchuta also applies. And Dina de Malchuta also applies, but we're not talking about it tonight, in terms of the government's role to establish coinage and to establish fair weights and measures. Clearly, Dina de Malchuta applies in those cases, by coinage and by issues of punishing criminals. Clearly, Dina de Malchuta applies there. But with those exceptions, according to the Sfaradim, and this is in Choshen Mishpat Simen Samach Ches, and in Simen Shin Samach Tes, it appears again and again in Choshen Mishpat, the Mechaber always takes a limited view of Dina de Malchuta, and he says that Dina de Malchuta only applies to taxes, with the exception of the cases of punishing criminals and establishing weights and measures. However, the Ramah quotes two opinions. If you look here in Source 5, the Ramah here in Simen Samach Ches, first of all, paskins that we say Dina de Malchuta even in the Shtar Kinyan. The Mechaber says we don't say Dina de Malchuta in the Shtar Kinyan. Those are the two opinions in the Gemara which parallel this conversation. But look two lines from the bottom in Source 5. Yesh Omrim, the end of the line. Yesh Omrim Dina de Malchuta Dina Ela B'misim U'michsim Atzulim B'karka. There's one opinion that we only say Dina de Malchuta on taxes. Not only regular taxes, but taxes that depend on the ground, land taxes. Ki amelach gozer shelo yodur ba'aretzo ki im b'derech zeh. Avol b'sha'ar devarim lo. There's one opinion, and this is a very limited opinion, that we only say Dina de Malchuta on taxes, and we also only say Dina de Malchuta on specific taxes, which are land taxes. However, short of that, we don't say Dina de Malchuta. V'yesh cholkin. But then there are those who disagree. Usvira lehu. De'aminan b'chol davar Dina de Malchuta Dina. And we say about everything Dina de Malchuta. And the Ramah adds, V'lachain hamal ve'al hamashkon. Let's say I lend you $1,000. So you give me a collateral. You give me your watch. As a collateral, right? Now, according to halacha, if the time to pay the debt comes and goes, and you didn't pay it up, so I'm allowed to sell that watch, providing 30 days have elapsed. 30 days after the debt is due, I can take the watch and sell it. Dina de Malchuta was that you had to wait a year. You had to wait a year before you could sell that watch. The Ramah says, V'lachain, hamal ve'al hamashgon, yochol l'machro achar shana, Ho'il v'chein Dina de Malchuta, v'chein hu ikar, etc. The Ramah says that the ikar, the main opinion is that we say Dina de Malchuta by everything, not only by taxes, but even in this case of if I lend you money and I have your collateral and you don't pay up, so I'm allowed to sell your collateral after a year based on Dina de Malchuta, even though that's not a case of taxation at all. Still, Dina de Malchuta applies. That's what the Ramah says. That's the main opinion that Ashkenazim follow. However, and the Gra points out also that this is based on the two opinions in the Gemara in Gittin that we read. However, the Ramah is probably also only talking about in Dine Mamonos cases. So now, someone asked me today, does Dine D'Malchuta tell me that I'm not allowed to jaywalk? What would you say? You get into trouble, right? It's a bad idea. If you get a ticket, you have to pay it. That's correct, because that's monetary. But can Dina de Malchuta say, I'm not allowed to jaywalk? Or can Dina de Malchuta say, I'm not allowed to make an illegal U-turn? Pikuach nefesh, right? So assuming, let's say, it's 3 o'clock in the morning on a side street, no one's around. Do you have to wait there? I mean, it's a little bit absurd, no? I don't think anyone waits. So
certainly
I think,
not in New York.
Definitely not in New York. So I think we're assuming that Dina D'Malchuta would not apply in jaywalking situations because Dina D'Malchuta, what?
Do you want to teach your kids that?
No, I mean, but it does not apply because there is no monetary issue involved. However, if I'm jaywalking when there are cars who might be coming, if it's at 3 o'clock in the morning and there's no car within 20 miles, okay. But if it's in a situation... So besides the pekuach nefesh issue, it could be in that situation it's real gezeila also. And it could be that the government has a right to do it because people have a right to use the roads. No? The government gives roads to people. The government paves roads. That's actually the proof that Dina D'Malchuta exists, the Gemara Bava Kamma says. The proof that Dina D'Malchuta exists, that we use the roads that the government made. The fact is that when I jaywalk and I'm taking away someone's right to that road, so that might be something about which Dina D'Malchuta is subject because there is something that I'm taking away. I'm taking away his rights to the road, which also may be like Dine Mamonos. Dine Mamonos doesn't have to be something that I attach a dollar sign to, but I'm taking away a serious and legitimate use. Yeah.
So, you brought in Zayla. It seems like, especially based on Hefker, Beit Din Hefker, and they determine whose property is what, every case of Dine, and also the Dine, is really just a case of Zayla.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. But the question is, can Dine de Malchuta apply to something about which Gezela is impossible, like jaywalking in certain circumstances? So my guess would be it doesn't apply. Think so.
So when we talk about taxes, we shouldn't talk about it's also because of Dina D'Malchuta Dina, it's also because of Gezela.
Yes. And we'll probably give a share next week about cheating on taxes, which is the continuation of this. But when it comes to cheating on taxes, you're absolutely correct. We'll try to discuss it next week. Now, I just want to make two other points over here about Dina D'Malchuta. Two points. Remember, the case in the Ramah says that we apply Dina D'Malchuta, Ashkenazi Jews apply Dina D'Malchuta not only to taxes, but to all elements of Dine Mamonos. We apply Dina D'Malchuta. According to the Sfaradin, they only apply Dina D'Malchuta to taxes, and maybe we should talk about, next week we'll have to talk about whether Israel is different than America, which is not a politically correct conversation. But the Shach has the following comment. The Shach says like this. This is sources 7 and 8. The Shulchan Aruch with the Shach. Remember, according to the Gemara, if I lend you money and you take a collateral, or I lend you money, I take a collateral, right? I take a collateral. So according to the Gemara, after 30 days, I'm allowed to sell it. Dina D'Malchuta says I'm not allowed to sell it until a year. And the Ramos says we follow Dina D'Malchuta because that's what everyone follows. Wonderful. Comes along the Shach, and the Shach says, Ramah, you're... By the way, the Ramah was the Shach's wife's grandfather. Right. He writes in the introduction that he feels free to argue with the Ramah because he is the intellectual heir of the Ramah, he says, and also the line, he said, I married the Ramah's granddaughter, and therefore he's part of the family, so you shouldn't think I'm arguing on him without respect. He's my grandfather, I love him, but he's dead wrong. So the Shach says, you know, Ramah, you're saying Dina D'Malchuta, and you can't sell this collateral until a year, But that means that we're saying Dina Malchuta against an explicit Gemara. You can't do that. You can't do that, the Rambam says. The Shach says. Look at note 8. He writes it in a very clear way. Because I katavti ladat harav. I wrote this all according to the Rambam. Ach, lafi ani adaiti, divrei harav tzarif ion. Be'ikar adin, shekatav rav, shalai yuchal lamakar pachot mishana. Shu davra tamua ma'od lafi ani adaiti. It's very perplexing. Since according to the Torah, you're allowed to sell after 30 days. You can't have Dina de Malchuta to go against Din Torah. Not only according to those poskim that Din de Malchuta only applies to taxes and stuff that the king benefits from, but even according to the Rama who argues you cannot possibly say Dina de Malchuta when it goes against the halacha in the Torah. Chalila, right, he says you can't uproot dinim in the Torah. Now this is very important. What the Shach means is that if I have a disagreement between two Jews, so then the laws of the Torah are binding. But if I have a disagreement between one Jew and a non-Jew, so then Dina de Malchuta is binding on the Jew also. If you read in the Encyclopedia Talmudit on Dina de Malchuta, he just writes this very clearly, but it's 100% correct. It's in the Shach. The Gemara says in a few places, for example, Chazakah for Jews is 3 years. If I've been squatting on a field after 3 years, it's assumed mine. It's assumed it belongs to me. For a non-Jew, Chazakah is 40 years. Right? It's a school of for a long life. Right? For a non-Jew, you have to squat on the field for 40 years until it becomes yours. Right? That means if a Jew's involved in the fight with a non-Jew, I'm not going to say Dina de Malchuta between two Jews and Chazakah is 40 years, because then I just got rid of the entire halacha. But between a Jew and a non-Jew, then I say Chazakah is going to be 40 years. Why am I making a big deal about this? One of the big cases that comes up is writing a last will and testament. No? Writing a will. So, halachically, there is a very limited number of people who inherit. For example, if there are sons, the halacha says that daughters don't inherit. That's the halacha. The halacha says that a husband inherits a wife, but a wife doesn't inherit a husband. Most people today, yeah?
What's this benot tzlafa?
What about benot tzlafa? There were no sons.
Oh.
Right? When there are sons, daughters don't inherit. Okay, so if there are no sons, then the daughters do inherit. That's the halacha in the Torah. Now, obviously today, we don't want to do this, right? I think my daughters would kill me if I try a stunt like this. In which case, they'd end up not getting the money. But, so we try to have some halachic will. We have a halachic will that we write, and the halachic will basically is a way of saying that you don't die and then have money which is bequeathed to your inheritors. Rather, you give the money over a moment before you die. There's effective ways of doing these halachic wills. It's a full shiur on its own about how we do it. Question, though. Why do I need a halachic will at all? Why don't I just say, remember, we're talking about money. Money. Dine mominus. It's a monetary issue. So when we talk about monetary issues, we should say Dina de Malchuta Dina. Follow the law of the land. Well, I think you're not obligated to give money to your children, but there's a default setting in the law. There's a lawyer here, at least one, right? What happens?
If you don't, it goes into state.
Okay, at least one.
It goes to the state if you don't.
It goes to the estate, and what does the estate mean? The estate means, I think, that the children end up inheriting, and sons and daughters inherit equally, according to American law.
Of course, sons and daughters inherit equally, and the spouse gets...
And the spouse, right, the surviving spouse gets the money. So, according to halacha, this is not true. So, why don't I just say, well, Dina de Malchuta kind of wins. It's Dina Mominus. So, what's the answer? The answer is the way we just learned the Shach. The answer is that, one second, I only say Dina de Malchuta, says the Shach, if it is between a Jew and a non-Jew. Or, if it's between a Jew and a Jew, but we are not contradicting something that's in the Torah. If there's a lacuna, if you have an area like buying futures, you're not going to find a pasuk in the Chumash about buying futures. doesn't exist. Right? Or corporate status. There's no such thing as a corporation in the Torah. Doesn't exist. So you have these new inventions that don't exist in the Torah, so then Dina de Machuta is binding, says the Shach. But something that exists in the Torah, so, and it's a dispute between two Jews, Jews have to follow the laws of the Torah. They can't follow Dina de Machuta. So that's why you would need a halachic will. You couldn't just say Dina de Machuta should help. This is one approach to why we need a halachic will based on this Shach. Yes. Okay, so we didn't make that point. The Shach himself writes, I'm in source 9, actually, which I thought I was going to skip because time is late, but the Shach writes in source 9 that even though we don't say Dina de Malchuta when it's between two Jews and it contradicts Din Torah, however, if the minhag of everybody is to follow the Dina de Malchuta, so then, the Din of Malchuta is binding. And the later post can point out what the Shach means is like this. That when there's a minhag, it's as if we made a stipulation, even though we didn't. In monetary matters, I can stipulate anything I want. I can make any condition I want. That's the halacha. So, says the Shach, and that's the case. The Beis Din of America, for example, when they deal with the case between Jews, but they're not dealing with big Talmidei Chachamim who know Choshen Mishpat. Regular Jews. Or certainly when we're dealing with Jews who are not halakhically observant. So the assumption when they entered their contractual negotiation was not that they're going to be bound by halacha. Their assumption is that they're going to be bound by the law. So it's ki'ilu hisne in that case. And therefore, since it's as if there's a condition that's made, in any situation that could make a condition, and everyone from this particular group, it's as if he did make a condition, so then we apply, then we do apply Dina de Malchuta. Correct, yeah.
Would that work for wills then? Assuming you had the person signing will, obviously, is willing to go with the laws of the state, at least here, state of New York, or whichever state they're from. If you then got whatever the first halakhic class of inheritors would be, in most cases,
According to this, it should, but we'll have another reason why you need a halachic will that we'll talk about in 1 minute. So let's go to source 10, right, which is the other reason why you need a halachic will. Remember, we began by distinguishing between dine mamonos and iser v'heter. We said that dine de malchuta applies to monetary matters. But it doesn't apply to, we can't say that the law of the land is that you don't need a get, so therefore you can divorce your wife without a get. That we're not going to say. That's iser v'heter. That's a ritual matter, and dina de malchuta does not apply to ritual matters. It only applies to monetary matters. Now, Yerusha, the Rambam tells us very interestingly, Yerusha is not really a monetary matter. Yeah, it involves money. But just because something involves dollars and cents doesn't mean it is considered a monetary matter. The Rambam writes, "Ein adam yachol lahorish l'misha eino ra'oy liyarsho, v'lo la'akor yerusha min ha'yoresh, afal pi shezeh mamon hu." In regular mamonos, I could give my money to anyone I want. However, I cannot give my inheritance to anyone I want. Why? Why, says the Rambam, "L'fi shenemer parashas nachalos o'haysal v'nei Yisrael l'chukat mishpat." The Torah calls it a chukah, lomar shechukah zu lo nishtaneh ve'ein hatznai mo'ilba. There's a special pasuk by Yerusha that we call it a chukah, we call it a law. Law usually means ritual law, right? We're not using law here, chukah, in the sense of law that defies understanding. No, it means ritual law. Says the Rambam that Yerusha, even though it looks and it smells like dine mamonos, but the fact is, it is called chukah. So therefore, there are. It's really iser v'heter, the Rambam says. It's really a halacha that there is a mitzvah to give Yerusha properly, and there's an iser to give Yerusha improperly. Moshe l'maha davar domer, Reb Baruch Ber points out, that this is the same thing as ribis, no? Interest. Is interest iser v'heter? Is it a prohibition in the Torah? Or is it a monetary matter? Could I make a condition? Oh, I'm lending you money on the condition that you pay me back interest. I say, well, it's a monetary matter and conditions are binding. No. Right? Because interest is iser v'heter. And you can't make a condition, oh, I'm lending you this money on the condition that I eat non-kosher. It doesn't work like that, right? You can't make conditions on ritual matters. Conditions can only be made on monetary matters. And even though ribis, and for our case, Yerusha, looks and smells like it is a monetary matter, but the fact is, the halacha treats it like iser v'heter. So that is another reason why Dina de Malchuta does not apply to wills, and you really need to write a halakhically valid will. How we do that, again, is a full other shiur. So this is just the tip of the iceberg in Dina de Malchuta. I thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
So Diana, you can't in American law. Yeah.